Reef Therapy by Reef Builders is brought to you by ICP Analysis. What's in your water?
What's going on, everybody? This is Jake Adams coming to you from the Reef Builder Studio. We have a very, very special guest. You know, we don't do guests very often on Reef Therapy, but I'm very proud to welcome a very good old friend, Mr. Steve Wiest. How are you doing? You can shake my hand even though they won't see it.
Thank you, Jake, for having me. It's been really a pleasure to be invited to come and take a look at the studio and see what you have going on these days.
I really want to thank you for coming out. Your aquarium philosophy has, as you can see, been a real big influence on the studio. And when I told people that you were coming to visit, they were like, he still has a tank. I thought he took it down. And so there's a lot of folks who remember who you are, who've been in the hobby industry for a long time. Your pictures of your tank are still circulating everywhere. And you and I stayed in touch, talking reef stuff, even when you didn't have a reef. And for a lot of our listeners who might not be familiar with your background and your history in the aquarium hobby, tell us how you, first made your impact felt on the aquarium hobby in the form of your two aquariums featured on OregonReef.com?
Correct.
All right.
Yep. First of all, I have to give a shout out to a very good friend of mine. His name is Pierre Artisan, and he is the one who is actually responsible for starting OregonReef.com. I had no ambitions of creating a website, but he insisted that I created a website. And I provided the content for him, and he says, I'll create a website for you, and he did. And it's still active to this day, mostly because it auto-renews, and I haven't gotten around to stopping that yet. But it's still alive today, and surprisingly, it's still valid in today's world, in today's aquarium hobby. So I've kind of left it up there.
You know, when I pulled it up, just to refresh my memory of some of the stuff you had up on there, it was like nostalgia, just going back to that website. But tell the listeners what are some of the things that they can see on that website. But really, let's just talk about your tanks, right? You had, how big is your tank? Is it 1,000-something gallons?
It was 850 gallons, and it was unique in that it was 6 feet by 8 feet by 30 inches tall. And what I did on that was a little bit unusual than what most people would do, even really a public aquarium would do. I made the built-in main viewing wall the short side. So it was a viewable panel of 6 feet, but a depth that you look through of 8 feet.
So kind of like a peninsula that you only look at in the end.
Correct. And what made it unique was that orientation, but not only that, but also the aquascaping, which was also set into a form of a canyon and almost with diverging walls on the side, which gave a perspective of even further depth. If you went around to the back wall and pulled off the panel and looked at it, you'd go, well, that's a lot shorter because now it's the opposite view, short going fat. So it actually had a forced perspective to even make that 8 foot of depth seem a lot deeper.
So before we dive into that tank a little bit, did you have aquariums before that? Did you have some experience with reef tanks before that?
Prior to that, I had a smaller tank. It was 500 gallons that I first set up, and that would have been right around 2000. And it wasn't enough. It was conventional. I wanted something, and I had the ability, since this was inset into a garage and I was not constrained by space, I wanted to take that down and actually convert it every moved into the new tank and made that tank basically the same 6 foot viewing panel, but now almost three times as deep going back. And that created all the difference in the world. That's what made it unique.
So you created your 1,000 gallon tank in a very different, environment of aquarium sophistication than we have today. A whole different subset of equipment, of techniques, of ideas. Besides, the forced perspective, I'm gonna get into a little bit of the livestock of your classic reef tank. What was some of the equipment that you used? Because this is before LEDs, maybe even before like propeller pumps kind of took off. I don't even know if needle wheels were big enough for that kind of tank at the time.
No. At that time, everything was geared obviously for smaller tanks, so everything had to be kind of upsized for that, for this tank. So one thing was the lighting. Obviously, there's not going to be a light hood, a standard, anything for that size tank. So I had to get out the carpentry tools and make a light hood that would be sufficient for that entire tank. And if I remember right, I think it was 12 400 watt halides. It was 8 VHOs, and mostly was using a few 10K Ushios, a few 14K Phoenixes, and probably half of them was 20K Radiums. That was our lighting choice at the time.
You had 5,000 or 6,000 watts just in the halides.
Exactly.
Ooh, God, that must have been a hot tank.
Well,
you know, just a lot of heat.
Then you have a 2-horsepower chiller.
Did you have 1 2-horsepower or 2 1s?
I used 2.
I knew you weren't using one. Yeah. I knew you're not using just one.
2 of the same chillers, but what I did is I had them offset by a temperature so I can, over the months, which one is the dominant chiller so they wear evenly over time.
How did you know to do that?
It's just a point of failure. If this chip, because I generate so much heat and it can cook the tank in a heartbeat, I needed a redundancy that made me comfortable that if that chiller ceases operation for some reason, you know, I had a backup.
Also, so you have a kind of a non-destructive, it's like a safe fail-safe.
Correct.
Like a non-detrimental fail-safe, I guess, yes, is what I'm trying to say.
And it also gave me the ability, because those coils build up gunk on them over time, it also gave me the ability to take one offline without disturbing the tank and basically acid bath it on the inside, clean it all out, and put it back online.
All right, so we've talked about the lights, your classic chillers. What skimmer were you using? Was this about 2003, 2005?
Correct, we're talking the low 2000s, 2004-ish type thing. It was employing what at that time was state of the art, and it was an external Deltec skimmer. It was basically a little mini R2-D2 sitting in the corner, mm-hmm, that was surrounded by, fed by, I think it was like, you know, like 4 Eheim 1262 pumps on them. And it did a great job. You know, it performed, it did the work, you know, but that was the state of the art. That type of equipment for larger systems was just coming available on the market for us, so.
Now, so today, man, dosing pumps are everywhere, but I don't know that you did dosing for a tank like that. You must have had a calcium reactor.
Correct. Also had a Deltec calcium reactor, and that's it.
No calc, no dripping, no dosing. Nope. Did you do any manual dosing of certain things?
The product wasn't available. We didn't have that available. We relied upon the calcium reactors. So what we were doing at that time, or what I was doing at that time, is, you know, I was testing for, you know, the usual pH, temperature, salinity, alkalinity, nitrite, nitrate, but that's pretty much it. We really, even the phosphate test kits.
Yeah, ICP testing wasn't even like a blink on the horizon. It wasn't even a glimmer in anyone's eye.
No.
Not even close.
No.
All right, so what did you do for flow on your 4x6-foot tank?
Flow, is it a huge challenge naturally, because I wanted it to be predominantly SPS, but it's still a mixed reef, so it had everything in there, so there's no doubt about that. But I had to hide the flow. It is completely offensive for me to see any kind of power heads, any kind of return jets, wires, hoses, any of that. Anything of man, I do not want to see in my display.
Let the record show that I tried really hard to hide 95% of all the equipment inside my tanks, and he still gave me some friction, it let me know his displeasure of being able to see the overflow teeth on the external drain boxes. I'm sorry to disappoint you, Sir Weiss, but I did my best. But yeah, I do appreciate almost an obsessive attention to making your reef tank just totally unobtrusive. Like, I don't mind having a couple nozzles, but you've seen people pay zero attention to this, and it's like a Super Mario level inside your aquarium with all these pipes and hoses and nozzles everywhere, and it can really detract from the aquarium. So what did you do, or some of the techniques that you did to hide the flow, and then what was your flow provided by?
My flow at that time, our big primary pumps were external pumps. I believe they're called like Dolphin pumps.
Yeah.
They were the Amp Masters. you know, they pulled one amp, they put out maybe 3,000 gallons an hour type
all
flow.
All AC pumps, DC pumps are still not even...
Not a thing yet. Yeah. Not an option for us. Nor was any controllability of these pumps at all. We couldn't ramp them up or down or anything else. None
so
of
you used Dauphin pumps in a closed loop?
In a closed loop.
How many loops did you have?
Four, one for each pump. And so those were delivering, those four, 3,000, and there was very little piping there for, to reduce that flow through friction losses through the piping. So I was getting probably a true 3,000, maybe slightly less.
From each one?
From each one.
No nozzles?
No nozzles.
No eductors, no penductors?
None of those things.
No trinkets or toys to adulterate the water flow?
No.
Just sheer volume and speed?
Correct. And those nozzles were incorporated into the rock work, but completely obscured by the rock work from the viewing panel. If you were to go up and look at the reef from the top, put the light, slide the light hood over for accessibility, look down, oh, there's nozzle 1, 2, 3, 4. Or if you go from the back of the unit, take off the rear viewing panel and look at it from the back from a maintenance access to clean the back panel or whatnot, it is a different aquarium. It is not show ready. That is not the point. Actually, I want to look at it and be able to visually check on things like that. It's just visually obscured from the viewing panel, but that doesn't mean not accessible.
How long did you have that tank running? Because, I mean, there was a good slice of time where that was kind of a pinnacle reef, and, you know, that was everybody's inspiration. Everybody who kind of graduated up towards that level, and it inspired so many reef tanks for a long time. How long did you have that tank going?
I believe I finally took it down. I don't document the actual dates or anything else like that, but I'm going to guess somewhere around 2008-ish, somewhere around there, and where I kind of moved on a little bit from that part of the hobby and entered another segment of it into cold water reef keeping.
So that's another thing I want to touch upon is there's some folks who keep cold water animals, and by and large, I mean, it's mostly public institutions and, you know, researchers and people in the Pacific Northwest. But I think you're definitely unique in kind of bringing in a lot of reef philosophy to your cold water tank. And I know that inspired a whole wave of both cold water keeping and non-photosynthetic animal keeping. Tell us a little bit about your cold water tank.
First of all, I live in the Pacific Northwest, Portland, Oregon, and we have some of the most incredible diving opportunities up in the Puget Sound area. Not so much off the Oregon coast because we're open water there, but up in Puget Sound, there are numerous fantastic dive sites. And when I dive those, I do scuba dive, and I go up there, I see a world that is so completely different and alien compared to our tropical warm water reef keeping, and nobody knows about it. Everybody's experience with a cold water tank is the lobster tank into the grocery store. They think it's bland, they think it's dull, they think it's gray, and it's anything but. But it's hidden in the cold water world of those environments, and nobody knows about it. So I wanted to still create a system, although smaller, about half the size of the original, that showcased those animals and that life, still employing the same kind of artistic aquascaping techniques that I employed on my larger warm water one.
All right, so we're just going to give you a sneak peek. You know, I don't have Mr. Weiss here just to talk about the good old days, because he's got a new tank set up that has got some of us in the know really, really excited to learn more. We're gonna only touch upon that, but in the meantime, I wanna really get your feedback. So you took a long break. You know, I visited you in Portland once or twice, and, you know.
Drank all my beer, yeah.
And your cold water tank was just in your garage, and you were just always looking for the right time to set it up. So you were in a holding pattern for 10 years?
About a decade, between some personal and job and other things, I was kind of out of the hobby, actively in the hobby. I never really left the hobby.
You
always kind of kept
a
thumb on it.
Periodically, like, we never missed a year.
Exactly, exactly. So it was about a decade, and I had my full cold water empty tank sitting there. Now, this tank was geared for cold water, so it's a little bit different in needs from warm water, but certainly can be modified slightly back to create a warm water reef. So I got tired of seeing the empty tank just growing spiders in there. I had everything. I never got rid of everything. All I needed to do was add water and I could start up again. So COVID hit and I decided, what the heck? I'm just going to go ahead and start up a reef again. And then I had to decide, what did I want to do?
So before you get into that, what was your impression of the aquarium hobby from the sidelines, right? You weren't really active on forums. You know, you and I probably stopped getting on bulletin boards at about the same time, but I know you were looking at stuff, probably picking up some magazines here and there, you know, seeing what was online. What was it like sort of being on the outside looking in?
A 10-year gap in that hobby was enormous. When I came back, before I kept a kind of a cursory, peruse some of the message boards, what are they talking about these days? But when I fully came back and then really started deep diving, it was a different hobby for when I came back. Priorities changed, tanks changed, equipment changed, everything changed. It was very different. Some things for the better, many things not for the better, at least in my opinion, and some of the things that are important for me in the tank. So that kind of pushed me actually into a direction of not going back to cold water and collecting my own stuff and whatnot. I go, I'm going to go back to my roots and create a mixed reef tank and see if I can't recreate on a smaller, more conventional sized tank, maybe some inspiration that some of my old tanks garnered back in the day.
When Steve says a mixed reef tank, that is not the mixed reef tank that we're literally recording next to at this moment. His reef tanks create like a variety of different eco zones, and somehow you can prioritize the top space for your anemones and have acros just underneath. And I know that blows people's minds. You know, you got bommies and ridderies, and something you did in your old tank and in your current tank where they're at the top of the tank. And I know the reasons for it, but when you say a mixed reef, you have like little micro ecosystems and groupings of similar corals. It's not what other people say when they say a mixed reef tank. You know, I'm pointing around to the tanks. That's a mixed reef. That's a mixed reef. That's a mixed reef. But a Steve Wiest mixed reef is a whole nother level. So, you know, we've gotten a lot more controllable with our pumps, a lot more smart features with lights, pumps, dosers, skimmers. And I know there's probably a lot of things you wished you could have done with your older tanks, but technology wasn't really practical to use at the time. So what were some of the improvements you were looking to make from your old tank to your new tank?
Two main areas that I deemed were fantastic improvements from what I had available to me in the early 2000s as to what I had now. And the one, lighting. I no longer had to bake the tank with metal halides. I now could do it with lighting. You now can have controllability of that lighting for ramping up, ramping down, controlling the spectrum. All of those were completely unavailable to us in that time. Our idea of ramping up was turning off the halides and leaving the VHOs on.
Pretty much, I think, towards, you know, the end of the heydays of the metal halides, there was a few controllable ballasts, manual control. There was a few ways to kind of control and ramp VHOs down to like 50 or 20%. But yeah, it's not even close to the orchestra of spectral colors that we can do now. It's like insane.
Yeah.
So.
And flow.
Yeah.
Flow is the other main component that changed. Before, I was limited to on and off, and that was it. Now I can have programmability on flow generation in the tank to create different environments, and really can create different environments really within the same tank with the controllability that we have now that was not available back then.
Before we kind of take a slightly deeper dive in some of your thoughts on the current state of the reef aquarium hobby, because I told people who know you that you were coming out, they all wanted to know your opinion. And I think you have the freedom to really say it like it is in a way that even I don't have, you know, as far as like, you know, coming across grumpy or critical. But before that, I just want to take a small detour because you have incredible experience with NPS corals, not only in your cold water aquarium, but within the zones of your reef tanks. It's every time I see that, I'm like, I can't do that. I'm not even gonna try. I'm gonna put all my NPS corals in their own little tank where I can really feed them and then manage nutrients later. But you manage to put them together in specific areas in your tank. So give us some tips on NPS coral care. And by NPS, I mean stony corals, you know, Tubastrea, Dendrophila, the likes, within a reef system.
First of all, my cold water tank was the training ground for all of that. Since it was 100% non-photosynthetic, how much food does it take to keep these things going? How often do they really need to be fed to keep going? That was a huge learning curve that actually forced me to create a refrigerated, automatic dosing system to automatically feed it multiple times a day to keep things going. And a lot of it too is governed from my physical diving experiences, seeing what environment and what food was available. So now how that translates over into warm water. I can't replicate that system in the tropical tank because it's more of a target feeding issue on these. So I place my dendros, any NPS stony corals, tropical in there. I try to put them where I'd put them in there, find them in their own environment. So we're talking shaded areas under overhangs, maybe in a cave, off to the far left, off to the far right that can be shaded. Algae is the enemy of those type of animals. They will get overrun with algae. A little bit of skeleton gets exposed, the algae will get on it and start it receding back. That is the biggest enemy against those animals. The other's feeding, and they like to come out at night, but we don't come out at night. So they can be trained to come out in the daytime. I do mine by just stirring up the sand a little bit or putting a little food in the water. That'll get them to come out, and then I target feed them. Target feeding them a variety of usually fresh, could be mysis, could be scallop, could be, you know, crushed LRS, could be a variety of ones, and they will gobble it down, and it works.
So in your experience, the stony NPS corals are not picky?
No, the food size that they will accept is not really different than the rest of the tank will take. You're not doing anything different. Yeah, if they were carnation corals or something like that, I'm not even gonna get involved with that. That would be an entirely different system that you would
need. I've tried and failed 4 or 5 times.
Everybody has.
I never even made any
Everybody
progress.
Everybody has.
Sometimes I thought I'd make progress, but that's why I'm like, all right, I'm okay playing with some, you know, these stony corals. And
exactly.
You and I went to a wholesaler, picked one up yesterday.
Exactly.
Algae is really important to prevent, you know, just for the life of the coral. I did notice that in your current tank and your older tanks, a lot of times you place the corals vertically. Is there any reason for that other than aesthetics? Does that prevent stuff like settling on them when you have a more vertical?
It doesn't necessarily. I am placing it. First of all, when I set up the tanks, it's purely for aesthetics. That is the overriding priority of me, is aesthetic. Everything else.
Functional aesthetics.
Functional aesthetics. I then have to overcome problems to allow that aesthetic to come through.
So in some ways, you make it harder for you by where you place your corals and stuff?
Because the aesthetics are so important to me.
Right. That shows. That
and
really shows.
In my current rendition, I wanted to do something a little different because of the aspect ratio of the tank and how it's working in an aquascaping. So I went with more of a balmy pinnacle design. And that's vertical aquascaping in and of itself. Vertical aquascaping on pinnacles. I no longer have horizontal surfaces that I am planting corals on. I am dealing with vertical surfaces.
All right. So now really getting kind of the meat of the discussion, and I'm going to let you talk until you go too far off the deep end. But people who know you really want to know what you think about some of this stuff. So let's just get it out of the way, man. What do you think about the current state of corals? You know, and that could be the sizes, how people are viewing corals, the kind of subjective names. I'm just going to let you go off. Go for it, Steve.
Okay, so we are now going to dive into old man yelling at clouds. Okay, corals. It was a very different world back when I had my tank going in the mid-2000s. We were dealing, one, with the way we acquired corals. It used to be true colonies, reefer madness. Our local fish stores were getting full shipments of corals. A little bit different than today's environment.
It was a huge variety. So much diversity of corals, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So definitely the diversity has changed a little bit from that aspect of it. But it seems like the focus of the hobby has now gotten a lot smaller. I am now dealing with people who must have 100 millimeter macro lenses and really good vision to see the individual polyp on these corals, and that's what they're interested in. I have never been interested in that, ever, ever. I am interested in the overall display of the aquarium. It is an artistic representation of nature. It is not natural. I don't like it when people say my tank looks natural. There's nothing natural about it. I've got corals from all over the world occupying a space that is 15 square feet. That is, you'll never find that in nature. It is an artistic representation of nature. So today's world has gotten away from that on their corals, and now we're looking at individual basically frags of corals and a frags of frags, and what they sell now, tiny little boogers.
I'm starting to call those really, really small. I went boogers, and then I went shards, and now I'm at genetic sample.
And I don't understand it. It doesn't have to be that way. There actually is quite a bit of availability out there not to have to go into that. So I don't understand the pricing of it, and I don't understand, it's basically become a world of
Pokemon.
Collect them all.
Gotta collect them all.
And the macro lens size, nothing ever grows in anybody's tank anymore because it immediately gets fragged down. I have no understanding of that, and I have no interest in being persisting. It holds no interest in me to going down that road. But others do, and you know, people find enjoyment in the hobby. It's just not my cup of tea.
I used to really